Boker Tov. Yesterday we spoke about a certain kind of potion, a concoction made of Alexandrian sap and alum and saffron mixed with beer. And it's very good for jaundice and it heals that disease. But on the other hand, it makes a person sterile. And we're trying to figure out how we can reconcile that with the pasuk that says "Ube'artzachem lo sasu," which is called an isus sirus, that we're not allowed to cause a person's sterility. So even though he needs it for jaundice, but he's violating the isur of sirus. And the Gemara tried a few answers, and the last answer, which is on the bottom of Daf Kuf Yud Amud Beis, we studied yesterday, and that is we're talking about a person who's already castrated. He's a soris. And we're on the last line now. That's where we're going to start today. V'omar Rab Chiya bar Abam Rab Yochanan. And here for the daf for today, we're on the top of Daf Kuf Yud Aleph Amud Aleph. Hakol Modim b'machametz achar machametz. Now, in the case of a carbon mincha, the Torah in Vayikra Vav says lo se'afech chametz and lo se'asech chametz, and there's a sugi menachos that darshins these various lavim that the Torah repeats itself over and over again about not making the mincha chametz. It shouldn't be fermented. And there are three parts to the process of preparing the mincha. One is called lisha, which means kneading. And then it's called orech or aricha, which means that you set up the dough in a certain order. And then there's ofeh. And then there is baking. And the Torah wants to tell you that you chaya for each one of these. And that means that there's a possibility of being chaya for violating three different lavim with one karma mincha. So for example, when he made the lisha, he already let it ferment, then he did the aricha and it was fermented, and he did the afia, it was already fermented. And in all cases, for each one of these molochos, if you could call it that, for each one of these asios, he's chayav. And the paradox is, once the lisha was a violation of chimutz, what did the aricha afterwards, what did the afia in the third level add to this? So we see that there's a principle called mechametz achar mechametz shu chayav. And the Gemara now wants to make an analogy to mesares, to say that just like in the case of mechametz, you're not chayav because you made it into chametz, that's the first fellow on this list, on this assembly line, you're chayav for doing a maisa of mechametz, an action that's relevant to chimutz. And therefore, the Gemara goes on to say that mesares achar mesares shu chayav, that we're going to darshan from the pasuk with regard to sirus, that even if a person is already sterile, there still is a prohibition of doing the maisa, the action itself, that would normally make him into a sterile person. That's prohibited. Shenemar, because in the parsha of mumim, which are animals that are excluded from the mizbeach, it says in Vayikra Chaf Beis, it says, Uma'uch v'kasus v'nasuk v'karus lo sakrivu l'Hashem u'bi'artzachem lo sa'asu. So let's read an English translation of this pasuk. The Torah says that in the parsha of Mumim, now, when we speak about Mumim, we always have to divide up mumim into two subcategories. These blemishes could either be for the animals that are brought on the Mizbeach. And then there's a parallel halacha of mum as far as the Kohen himself is concerned. And when we talk about mumin in this particular context, we're talking about the mutilation of the reproductive organ. And we're going to prove from this pasuk that even if the organ was already mutilated, there still is a prohibition of doing it a second time. So the Torah says, with regard to the mum, there's something called ma'uch, which means the testicles are squeezed. Then there's kasus, they're crushed. Nasuk means they're detached. Vikarus means they were cut. So the Gemara analyzes this. Im ala karus chayav, if he's already violating the iser when it's karus, that means when it was squeezed, is then al nasuk lo kolshken, he's already been mutilated, and now it makes sense that if he does an action to detach his testicles completely, right, they're completely cut off, that this would be included in the Easter. So why did the Torah have to add nasuk to karus? Karus means it's already crushed, he's already mutilated, and now you're talking about cutting the testicles, then detaching the testicles. Why did the Torah have to add that? And the answer must be that El Lahavi Nosek Acher Kores Shuchayev, that even if after the testicles were mutilated, if somebody then cuts them off, he's chayev. So we see clearly that the Torah prohibits an act of castration even with regard to someone who is already castrated. So then we come back to drinking this potion that causes sterility, and you answered, well, he's doing it for the purpose of jaundice as a therapy, but nevertheless he's going to be sterile. How's he allowed to do this? He's violating the Issur Sirus. And we offer the answer that perhaps the heter, the permissibility, is limited to someone who's already a Saris. It's not going to help you to tell me that he's already a Saris, because nevertheless there's an Issur of Misaris Achar Misaris. Okay then. So the Gemara answers, V'ela B'zaken. We're talking about a person who is old and he's incapable of having children. And the Issur Sirus applies only to a person who's included in the mitzvah and the obligation to have children. Once he becomes a zaken, then he's excluded from the parsha of Sirus, the Issur Sirus. And this is not similar to be Misaris Achar Misaris, because Misaris Achar Misaris is referring to a person who is in the parsha. In other words, physically, he could have had children, but not in the case of a zaken. So now the Gemara questions, can we really determine in an absolute certain way that a person, because he reached a certain age, he's no longer capable of having children? V'amar Rabbi Yochanan, hein. The Gemara in Gittin has a whole sugya about a marriage situation where the husband is unable to perform sexually. The question is whether he has to divorce his wife, and she could force that, and so forth. And the Gemara there discusses various therapies that could be used for a person who's incapable of performing. He's impotent. And Rabbi Yochanan testifies about himself, Hechziruni Linarusi, even though I was very old, I used these various medications, and guess what? It worked, he says. I was able to have intercourse, and I was able to bear children. And therefore, how can you tell me about a zaken that he's excluded from Sirus? Zikna itself, in the case of a male, does not necessarily create an irreversible status vis-a-vis having children. Ella, the Gemara says, be Isha. That the case where we allow her to take this concoction in order to heal herself from jaundice, knowing that it's going to cause sterility, that's only for a woman. She's not included in the mitzvah period of a rivia. She doesn't have that obligation, and therefore she doesn't have an isur to make herself into an akara, into someone who's barren. So Gemara says, well, the issue of whether a woman is included or not in mitzvah's period of a rivia is machlokas tanoim. And in fact, the Rabbi Yochanan ben Broka, the Omar al Shneim hu Omer, when the Torah addresses man, and he says, "Vayivarech osam Elokim, vayomer lahem Elokim pru urevu." The Torah formulates God's command of pru urevu in the plural. Notice he's addressing ustedes, right? Both of you, male and female, and therefore even a female is included in the mitzvah period of Viriv, and ipso facto, she's also included in the Isur Sirus. Ma'ikol Meimar. How are you going to explain and justify the drinking of a koshal ikrim as a therapy for jaundice in the case of a woman who's obligated like a man in the mitzvah period of Arivia? She also has the Isur Sirus. And the Gemara answers that in the case of a woman, there is a point of irreversibility. And that's either Bizkena or Inami Bakora. So with the exception of Sarah Imenu, which was Alpider Chanes, a woman reaches menopause, she can no longer have children. That's an irreversible. No medicine is going to change that. And secondly, we have an Akora. We have a case of a woman who was born barren without the inner capability of bearing a child. So she's not included in the mitzvah period of Rivia, and ipso facto, she's not included in the Isur Sirus. Now, it's very interesting because the truth is that when you talk about someone who's infertile from birth, an Akara, there also is a male counterpart to that. Even in a male situation, you could have a male who was born an Akar, it's called. Not an Akara, but an Akar. So in truth, the Gemara could have interpreted this heter of taking the kos shel ikrim in a case of a male akar, where the process is unchangeable. But the Gemara wants to give the case of a woman because there's a variety of different possibilities and situations. Okay. Now we get to the Mishnah on Daf Kuf Yud Aleph Amid Aleph. And the Mishnah wants to, again, continue with the concept of the Isur Refuah. And once again, let's just review the basics. We don't take medications on Shabbos for therapeutic purposes, but there are two exceptions. One is when it's something that a normal, healthy person would also do it, so there's no heker, it's not obvious to the spectator that he's doing it for the sake of Refuah. And then we have somebody called a Chole, whose body is not well, and he's allowed to take refuah. Now, what about a person who has a toothache, and it seems that taking vinegar into the mouth, because of the sharpness, it's able to some extent, to relieve some of the pain in his tooth. Hachoshesh b'shinov. Lo yigamea ba esachomets. He shouldn't be filling his mouth up with vinegar, because people who are healthy don't take vinegar into their mouths in that way, and therefore it's clear to the onlooker that he's doing it for the sake of refuah, and he's not a cholet. It hasn't affected his whole body. Again, if he gets to the point where he's in such pain that he can't function, you know, like something similar to a migraine headache, chas v'shalom, but then for sure he's allowed to take medication. But we're talking about someone who has a kaev, you know, he has some sort of a toothache, and he can survive it. Avol mitabel hu kidarko. But there is a solution for the person who has this ache. And what he could do is he could take his bread and dip it into vinegar. And that's the way a healthy person would do it. Again, he's not doing it because he wants to dip his bread into vinegar. He really wants to relieve his pain. V'im nisrapi nisrapi. If it works, it works. Hachoshesh b'masnav, he has pains on the sides of his body, in the middle of the body. And for that, they used to have a therapeutic method which is called anointing the area with wine or with vinegar. Again, the acidity apparently would be helpful to relieve the pain. Lo yosuch yayin v'chometz. Do we have a solution for him? Yeah. Sochu es hashemen. He could take the oil and put it on his body in a way that even a healthy person would do it. In other words, he's not doing something unusual. And then once he has the oil on his body or on his hands and so forth, then he's allowed to apply it. However, the exception is what's called shemen vered, rose oil. There was a way of extracting oil from roses, and it was very expensive, this oil, very rare, and healthy people did not, generally speaking, did not have access to use this kind of an oil. And a sick person who's suffering would go out of his way to spend the extra buck in order to purchase this kind of oil. And the Mishnah prohibits it on Shabbos because it's obvious to the onlooker that he's doing it for therapeutic purposes, because who could afford rose oil? But the Gemara says, B'nei Malachim, the princes, Sochin Shemin Vered Al Makosehem, they are permitted to do a direct sicha of rose oil, despite the expense, on their makos, and it's not obvious to the naked eye that they're doing it for therapeutic purposes. Why? Shekein darko, losuch, bechol. We see that it's all subjective. If given the financial stability or superiority of a prince, he would use shemen vered the whole week long. He wants to get the best quality oil for his anointing purposes. He's going to spend that extra money. He's got an unlimited bank account. And therefore, he's allowed to do it on Shabbos. Rabbi Shimon says that any Jew is allowed to use rose oil. Why? Because Kol Yisrael B'nei Malachim Hem. The Jewish people are considered like princes. And they all would be considered, it'd be considered like almost normal, accepted, healthy, and weekday behavior to put this rose oil on the body. Okay. The Gemara says, Rami le Rav Acha Aricha, to hu Rav Acha bar Papa, le Rabbi Avo. So Rav Acha, the tall one, he asked a question to Rabbi Avo. Tanam, we learned in our Mishnah. Hachoshesh b'shinov lo yigamei abhem es hachometz. So if he has an ache in his teeth, he should not be filling up his mouth with vinegar. L'meimra, shall we say, dechometz ma'al l'shinayim. Obviously, the premise is that this is a valid therapeutic method. Otherwise, the Mishnah wouldn't prohibit it. If it's not therapeutic, it's not called a refuah, it's not Asar on Shabbos. V'aksiv, we have a pasuk in Mishlei. Kachometz l'shinayim k'ashon l'inayim kein ha'atzel l'sholchav. So Shlomo HaMelech in Mishlei is castigating the atzel, person who's not willing to take initiative, he's lazy, and so forth and so on. And he compares him to Ashon le'inayim, smoke in the eyes, that's certainly very harmful. And chometz l'shinayim, it's like vinegar to the teeth. Obviously, if he's using this as a mashal, and again, the Mefarshim are going to explain that mashal, but it means that vinegar is not healthy for the teeth. It actually loosens the gums, and the teeth become very, very movable, so to speak. So you see, it's negative. It's not therapeutic in any way. Lo kasha habekiyua deperi v'habechala. So that when you have these grapes and you make wine out of them, eventually, if the wine ferments, it becomes wine vinegar. And if you take the grapes before they are fully ripened, then if you produce chometz out of those unripened grapes, then it has a very negative effect on the body. But in the case of challah, which is, challah is the Aramaic word for vinegar, and it's made from wine, very fine wine, from the best of grapes that were fully developed, that is beneficial for the teeth. Ibai Sema, the Gemara offers an alternative answer, hava habachalya, both a pasuk, which indicates that vinegar is harmful, and the Mishnah, which indicates that vinegar is therapeutic, are both referring to fully grown grapes and the vinegar that was made from wine. But our Mishnah is talking about a case of de'ika maka. He has some sort of a sore in his mouth, and when he puts this vinegar into his mouth, it is harmful. It's going to irritate that sore that he has in his mouth. But in the case of our Mishnah, where he has a toothache, the lekamaka, he has no wounds, if you will, in his mouth, and therefore he will not suffer any harmful effect. On the contrary, it will be beneficial for him for his toothache to take the vinegar into his mouth. Ika maka masi. The ileka masa maka merape. He says the following. This is just the reverse of what I suggested. He says, ika masa maka, if he has some sort of a wound in his mouth, then the opposite of what I said, then the vinegar with its acidity apparently could help the maka, and therefore it's definitely a refuah and it's prohibited on Shabbos. But if he has no maka, then merape. Merape means it softens the gums, and as a result, the teeth, Rashi says, become movable, so to speak. They're no longer solid in their place. Now the Mishnah says, Lo yigameh b'hem esachomets. V'atanya, what do we do with a brisa that says, Lo yigameh upolet, avol megameh ubolea? He's not allowed to take the vinegar into his mouth and spit it out, because that indicates he's only doing it for a fuah. But he's allowed to take the vinegar into his mouth and then swallow it. So nobody has to know that it's refuah, and that should be mut. Our Mishnah, in unqualifiedly, without any qualification, says lo yigameh b'hem esachomets. Apparently, even if he would swallow it, it would be prohibited. Rabbi kitna nami masnisin. Let's reinterpret and restrict our Mishnah to megameh upoletnan. It's a case where he is going to spit out the vinegar, and therefore it's clear that he's doing it for a refuah. Rav Amar, afilu tema. Now, just by introduction, Rav is about to present a reconciliation, but don't get too excited about it, because at the end, Rav is going to go back to Abaye, and he's going to rescind his position. Afilu tema megameh ubolea. The Mishnah would prohibit even a case where he takes the vinegar into his mouth and he swallows it. Kan. However, the brisa that says he's allowed to take it into his mouth, this vinegar, and swallow it, that's lifnei tibul. Tibbeli translates as Achilas HaSe'uda. No, that was the word they used back in the time of the Gemara. For Se'uda, they used the word Tibbel, which means dipping, because they used to, you know, at their Seudos, it was absolutely common to dip things. So he says the following: if he hasn't yet eaten his Se'uda, and now he takes his piece of bread and he dips it into vinegar, then he's allowed to put this into his mouth and swallow it. Why? Because since it's before the meal, they used to dip things into vinegar, like bread and so forth, before the meal. And therefore, the spectator thinks that he's doing it because he wants to eat the bread with vinegar. But Khan, in our Mishnah, is prohibited, even if he would swallow the vinegar and not spit it out, because it's Li'achar Tibbel, he's already eaten his Seuda. And no one would take that bread normally and dip it into vinegar after the meal is over, and therefore it must be that he's doing it L'shem Refuah. So now, the Gemara presents a contradiction from Rava to Rava, to this statement of Rava, that you can have something that 5 minutes ago it was mutter, but 5 minutes later it's aser. On Shabbos, the same action was mutter before he ate his meal, and it's aser after he ate his meal. The Gemara says that cannot be a tenable position, at least not for Rav. Why? Because Nemo, we should apply the following principle. Mi delifnei tibul shari, li'achar tibul nami shari. We have a rule, a hardcore rule, when it comes to Shabbos, that which is prohibited, I'm sorry, let's start the other way around. That which is permitted at one point in Shabbos continues to be permitted during the entire balance of Shabbos. You can't take an action and say, well, it's mutter now at time T1, Shabbos morning, let's say, and then Shabbos afternoon, it's time T2, it's awesome. And in my humble opinion, I think what underlies this Gemara is the concept of Kiddushas Hayom, that the sanctity of the day, which generates the various Isurim, because whenever we find Kedusha, we find Isur, is one, what we call Mikshachas, it's one entity. It's not divisible. You can't say that, you know, on the night of Shabbos, something is going to be Isur, and the day of Shabbos is going to be Mutter, vice versa. If it's Mutter, any point in Shabbos, it's going to be Mutter for the whole of Shabbos. Not only that, I would go even a step further, that this concept of Kiddushas Hayom as one entity will be extended from one Shabbos to another Shabbos, or for that matter, from one day that has Kiddusha to another day that has Kiddusha. And that would mean that if on Shabbos it would be mutter to do X, whatever that X might be, we'll see in a minute, then it, by definition, ipso facto, according to Rav at least, it's going to be mutter on another Shabbos, or on Yom Kippur, or on Yontif. And how do I know that's true? The Shamita Leila Rava, because we heard Rava Shir, the Islan, he formulated the following principle called Hoil. Hoil means that if you have something that is mutter, then it's always going to be mutter. That's called Hoil. And the Yomar Rava, Rava was talking about Yom HaKippurim. On Yom HaKippurim, the Kohen Gadol does a various number of tvilos. Now, tvila, going into a mikvah, could be something that's awesome. For example, let's say you have a keli, a utensil, and you bought it from a guy. You're not allowed to take it to the mikvah on Shabbos. That's called tikkun mana. That's like a makah b'patish. You're fixing it up. And if, let's say, somebody is tamei, and he wants to fix himself up, and he goes to the mikveh, that should also be aser, just like a kli is aser. The answer is nay, it's not aser. Why? Because we could always say that he wanted to cool off from a hot day, and he went into cold water. It's not necessarily muchach, it's not proven that it's a maisa tvila. And therefore, says Rava, leka midi de b'shabbos shor b'yom ha-kippur maser. To the same extent that on Shabbos we're going to permit tevila in a mikvah, And the reason for that is it's not called tikkun because you could always say lemakarer di, he's interested in just cooling himself off. So on Shabbos it's mutter. Now on Yom Kippur, he goes into the mikveh multiple times. You're not going to tell me that he's cooling himself off. Not only that, he goes to mikveh even at night when it's cold. So this whole explanation that, oh yeah, you know, he's only doing it to bathe or to this, that doesn't apply to Yom Kippur. But Rava says the Kedushas Hayom of Shabbos and Yom Kippur is one equilibrium. It's one continuum. It's one entity. And therefore, we're going to apply the principle of Hoel de B'Shabbos Shari, B'Yom HaKippurim Nami Shari, that any tefillah on Yom Kippur is permissible simply ipso facto because it's permissible on Shabbos, because we have this one entity of Kedushas Hayom that applies both to Shabbos and Yom Kippur, and certainly it would apply within Shabbos itself. Then you can't tell me that before I eat my meal, I'm allowed to dip my bread into the vinegar and swallow it and help my toothache, but after the meal I'm not allowed to do it. That's impossible. It's going to upset and irritate the principle of Hoel. So the Gemara suggests Hoder Bei Rava Mehach. We're going to have to assume that Rava rescinded his original position to distinguish between Tibul, before Tibul, before the Suda, Tibul Liachar HaSuda. If it's Mutter before the Suda, it should be Mutter afterwards. And therefore, he's going to have to, by process of elimination, fall back on a Abaye's distinction that it depends upon whether or not he's spitting out the vinegar or swallowing the vinegar. So the Gemara asks me, Mai Dimihach Hoder Bei Dumimiahi Hoder Bei. You have a contradiction between two positions of Rava. You don't know which one he rescinded. Why not insist that he rescinded his position on Tevilah on Yom HaKippurim and he rejects now the principle of Hoel? And the Gemara says that's impossible. Lo salka daitoch, that you shouldn't entertain that. It can't be possible. Why does sign you have a brice that says Kol Chayovi Tevilos Tovul Kedarkon Bein B'Tishabov Bein B'Yom HaKippurim? Anyone who has to do a tefillah for whatever mitzvah he has to do it for, he's allowed to do so both on Tisha B'Av when there's an Iser of Rechitza and on Yom Kippur when there's an Iser Rechitza. And Rava cannot contradict this formulation of the Braisa. And the only way we can justify this Braisa, because here it's Muchach, it's absolutely crystal clear that he's doing it for the sake of tefillah of a tikkun, to fix himself up. That should be also no less than tefillah of a keli into a mikvah, which is also on Yom Kippur. The answer must be Hoel. So we see that Rava is committed to this position of Hoel. The Kedushas Hayom is one, and therefore before the Suda, after the Suda, it's got to be all the same. You can't say it's Mutter before the Suda and Osir after the Suda. Hence, we're going to have to go back to Abaye's answer. It depends whether he's polite or he's not polite. Omar Rabbi Abba Bar Zavd Omar Rav Halacha Ki Rabbi Shimon. We're talking about anointing oneself on Shabbos with rose oil. And Rabbi Shimon says it's mutter, because if the princes do it, then we are also princes. So the Gemara says, L'meimra de Rav Ki Rabbi Shimon Sfirale. Now, what we're about to embark upon is a very challenging premise in the Gemara. The sugi itself I understand, but the premise of the sugi is very difficult. The Gemara thinks that we have to determine what Rav's position is vis-a-vis Rabbi Shimon on Shabbos, meaning Rabbi Shimon's Piskei Halacha on Shabbos. And Rav has to take a position and be consistent. Either he accepts Rabbi Shimon in Shabbos, or he rejects Rabbi Shimon and Shabbos. And that goes straight across the board. You can have many different issues where the Chachamim reject Rabbi Shimon, and Rabbi Shimon dissents, you know, he's the dissenting opinion, on different issues. But when it comes to Psak Halacha, you have to determine and be committed to whether we accept Rabbi Shimon, and we don't. If we accept Rabbi Shimon, we have to accept Rabbi Shimon straight across the board. Now, if Rav Paskins like Rabbi Shimon, according to this transmission, in the case of rose oil, then he has to be committed to all of Rav Shimon's rulings with regard to Shabbos. That's the underlying premise of the sugya. Very challenging to understand this. I mean, I would have said, okay, each machlokes between Rav Shimon and Chachamim is independent. I can accept Rav Shimon here and reject it here. But the Gemara says no. So it's chad v'chola. V'omer Rav Shimi bar Chiya mishmei derav, hai mesuchraya din ezaisa. So they used to have a barrel of beer, and to plug up the beer, if they had a spout, they had a spout. If they didn't have a spout, they would use a cloth, and they would tighten it into the hole so that none of the beer would flow out. And now we turn to Daf Kuf Yud Aleph Amid Beis. Is Asur La Duke Biyoma Tava? We have a problem of what's called Schita. When you have a garment that's absorbed with liquids, you're not allowed to squeeze out the liquids. That's a tolda of Meleches Mefarek, or possibly of Meleches Melaben. In the case of beer, I would presume this is a tolda of Meleches Dash, of Disha, because it's hard to say Melaben that he's cleaning a garment by squeezing out beer from it. So let's assume it's Meleches Dash, when you have something absorbed and something else in there. They're connected to each other. You break that connection, that's called dasht, threshing in English. And Rav is on record as saying, you're not allowed on Yontav, and certainly not on Shabbos, to take this cloth and push it into this gap to tighten and close that gap so that none of the liquids will ooze out. Why? Because inevitably, when he squeezes and pushes this cloth into place, he's going to be squeezing out the liquid from the cloth. Well, guess what? That Isur of Rav could only possibly reflect the Shita of Yehuda, but not of Rav Shimon. Because Rav Shimon holds, Dover She'eno Miskaven is Mutter. He has no interest in squeezing out any liquids from this cloth. He's just trying to plug up the barrel, the spout. So therefore, since Rav is committed to the position of Rav Yehuda in the principle of Dover She'eino Miskaven, and he's going to paskin like Rav Yehuda against Rav Shimon, then he should paskin against Rav Shimon with regard to the permissibility of using rose oil. And rose oil has to be out. How could Rav paskin like Rav Shimon that you're permitted to use rose oil for anointing yourself on Shabbos, even if you're not a prince, when Rav is committed to paskin against Rabbi Shimon, in the case of Mesuchraya din Azaisa with regard to Dover She'eino Miskaven, he accepts Rabbi Yehuda? Gemara answers no. But he, in the case of plugging up the barrel with that cloth, afilu Rabbi Shimon moda, Rabbi Shimon would also concede that it's prohibited. And we cannot apply the principle of Dover She'eino Miskaven Mutter. Why not? I wonder how many times we've had this in Masechta Shabbos. It's like a refrain. That Rav Shimon agrees that if the result of your action is inevitable, like you cut off the head of the chicken, it's going to die, then it's awesome. It's like he was Miskaven. So therefore, Mesuchraya din Azaisa, we have what's called a psik resha. It's like he cut off the head of the chicken. The Gemara now asks another kash on Rav. For Amar Rav Chiya Barashi Amar Rav Halacha Kerev Yehuda. He says explicitly that we pass like Rav Yehuda that a Dover She'eino Miskaven is also. And Rav Chanan Bar Rav Ami Amar Shmuel. Shmuel takes a different position. Halacha Kerev Shimon and Dover She'eino Miskaven. Rav Chiya Bar Ovin Masni Le Below Gavri. According to one transmission, it wasn't so-and-so in the name of Rav, or so-and-so in the name of Shmuel, but below Gavri, Rav Omar Halacha Krab Yehuda, Shmuel Omar Halacha Krab Shimon. So now we see that Rav paskins like Rabbi Yehuda. How do we justify that Rav could paskin like Rabbi Shimon with regard to rose oil? El Omar Rava Aniva Risha B'chabura, I and the great one in the lion of our colleagues. We're going to find out who that is in a second. Tagamina, Okay, so we interpret it, but now we take a little break. Umanu, and who is the other one that's called the lion of the Chabur of Chiyavar Ovin? That when Rav says halacha k'Rabbi Shimon that you're allowed to use rose oil on Shabbos, lav mitame. It wasn't that he accepted Rav Shimon. He only used this as a way of conveying his ruling, Rav, that it's mutter to do it, but he didn't do it because he paskin like Rav Shimon. Rav Shimon had one reason why he said it was mutter, and Rav had another reason, entirely different reason. Rav Shimon's reason was because even though we don't usually use rose oil, we're not princes, but we have a principle that B'nai Yisrael Malachim. You know, Yisrael are B'nai Malachim, we're all princes. That's not Rav. Rav didn't accept it. He came to the same conclusion that you're allowed to use rose oil on Shabbos, but for a different reason. So, what do we mean? Halacha k'Rav Shimon v'lav mitameh. Ilema, if we assume it means that halacha k'Rav Shimon d'shari, that you're allowed to use rose oil, v'lav mitameh, but not for the same reasoning, to ilu Rabbi Shimon sovar. Masi. Rabbi Shimon agrees that and lays down the premise that rose oil is very therapeutic, but it's only muta because kol Yisrael b'nei malachim hem. And Rav, sovar lo masi, Rav says you're allowed to use rose oil because he came to a medicinal conclusion, evaluation, that rose oil is not therapeutic, and therefore if it's not a therapy, it's not included under refuah. So Gemara says, no, that's not the way to go. Vamidik Tani, it says in our Mishnah, B'nai Malachim, Sochin al Gabi Makoseim Shemin Vered, that the princes actually, if they have a wound, they will use rose oil to anoint the wound. Michlal, we could derive from that to Masi, it must be that objectively this oil, even beyond other oils, is therapeutic. So how then could Rav permit it? El Harlocha Kravi Shimon Deshari. Shari, even in a place where people can't afford, your average citizen doesn't have the funds to buy rose oil, nevertheless it's permissible because we're all B'nai Malachim. Rav never accepted that. But Rav Sover Ishchiach in V'lo Shchiach lo. It all depends upon whether people in a certain area, given that location, they have the funds, or maybe there's a greater accessibility on the market at a cheaper price to buy rose oil, and that will determine whether or not it's a refuah. If you're in a location where it's low shkiyah, people can't afford it, then it's called a refuah. It's obvious that he's using this because he has a makah. But if on the other end it's shkiyah, ubi asur derav shkiyah mishcha devarda. Rav lived in an area in Bavel where they had accessibility to rose oil at a decent price, and it was quite common. People paid just a couple extra piastre for the higher quality of oil of rose oil. And therefore, it's not muchach. Nobody could know whether he's doing it for the sake of refuah. But that's not Rabbi Shimon. Rabbi Shimon made an absolute statement all over the world. In any community, you're allowed to use rose oil. Rav never accepted that. Rav only paskined like Rabbi Shimon in his area, locally, where rose oil was quite common, even on a weekday, and even for your rank and file season. Hadron Alecha Perek Shmona Shvatz. And now we begin the 14th chapter of Masechta Shabbos. And we are well on the way towards the Siyum, because basically, we have, if let's say we've done, after today, 110 blots, so we have another 47 blot. No, 37 blot. Am I right? Right, 37 blot. Okay, it's just a month around the corner. I was hoping it'll work out during the 9 days, but I think it's before the 9 days. Anyway, okay. So one of the malachas of Shabbos is kosher, tying a knot. And another malach is called matir, untying a knot. And untying a knot means that sometimes the knot has to be redone. or moved in another way. So you have to take it apart in order to retie it. So when you take it apart and you untie it, you chayef meleches mati. The elu ksharim chayoven alei chatos. Which categories of knots are considered what we call kesher shel kayom? They're a permanent knot. And he expects to leave that knot there forever and ever. And therefore he's chayef. Number one, kesher hagmalim. So those who are camel drivers, they tie knots. We'll see exactly what these knots are. The kesher asfanim, and the sailors with their ships, they tie knots. And these are permanent knots. And therefore, yichayev achatos if you violate the Shabbos with these knots. But a non-permanent knot, which is a kesher shenek shel kayoma, you're not chayev for. Does that mean it's mutal chatchil or it's osim rabbanon? That's going to be our sugya for today. Ukishem shu chayev al kishuron, kach u chayev al heteron. If he takes apart a kesher shel kayoma in order to retie it elsewhere, then he's chayev matir. Rabbi Meir omer kol kesher shu yochel atiru biachas miyodav ein chayov nalav. If you want to know what's considered a kesher she'ena shel kayoma, it's not permanent, and therefore you're potur, then just see if you could remove the kesher, undo the knot with one hand. If you could take one hand and undo the knot, then Rabbi Meir holds it's not a kesher. The Gemara asks the following question. My kesher hagmalim v'kesher hasfanim. What is this knot about which, in the case of a camel driver or the sailors, the Mishnah classifies it as a kesher shel kayom? Now let's understand that there are two knots. There's one knot at this end and the other knot at the other end. Let's say you're a camel driver and you want to make sure that the camel, you know, when you're at a certain point where you want to take a break, you know, you want to make sure the camel doesn't run away from you. So you tie down the rope that's around the neck of the camel to a post. Or, for example, you're a sailor, so you have a boat and you're docking. So you tie down a knot that's attached to the boat onto this pole. That's one knot. The other knot is a fixed knot that's around the neck of the animal through the ring. They used to put a ring around the animal and tie it with a knot. Or, in the case of a boat, the other end of this rope was permanently affixed to the boat. Mashenkin, the other knot, that was only on a temporary basis, just to keep it in place while they're docking. So the Gemara says, Ilema, if the Mishnah has in mind Kitra de Katri Bizmama, that they had this Kesha, this Ritsua, this strap for the camels, and the head of the strap was tied around the neck, and he's now tying the other end to the pole. So if that be the case, then that's not a Kesha Shel Kayoma. Or, for example, V'chein Katra de Katri beistirida. Let's say you have a boat and you want to dock the boat, so you tie a knot with the string that's attached to the boat to the dock. So the Gemara says in those two cases, Hai Kesher Sheina Shel Kayomu. There's no way that the Mishnah could say that you're chayef for that. It's not a permanent knot. You know, as long as the boat is docked for a week or two, or how long it is, or the camel is here, but otherwise we intend to take apart this knot. Ella, but rather you have to interpret the Mishnah as referring to Kitra Dizmama Gufe and the Istirida Gufa. In other words, we're talking about the knot that is around the tabas, the ring that's in the mouth of the animal. We call it a bit. Or in the case of a boat, we're talking about that kesher which is permanently attached to the boat itself. Rabbi Meir Omer called kesher, if he can just remove and untie the knot with one hand, then it's a kesher shein shel kayoma, and he's not chayev. Boy, the Gemara is a sofek, Rav Achtevoy Achoy Demar Acha. So Rach the boy had the following suffix. Aniva l'Rabbi Meir mahu. What's the status of a bow according to Rabbi Meir? And what you do is you make two loops, right, by looping around the string on one side of the string, on the other side of the string, and then you sort of wrap the loops around each other, and you make a knot out of the two loops. It's quite tight, and it might be permanent, but on the other hand, it does fulfill Rabbi Meir's description of Yochol Latiro Biachas Miyodah. Yeah, you can have a very tight bow that you really tighten, but nevertheless, if you give a good zetz, a good pull with one hand, you can untie the bow. So Gemara analyzes the suffix. Taima de Rabbi Meir mishum de yochol atiro biachas miyodav. Rabbi Meir determines that the nature of this kesher is that it's enosh al kayom because he can untie the knot with one hand. V'hanami here too in a bow yochol atiro. With one hand, he can untie it. Odilma, time of the Rabbi Meir, Rabbi Meir is only using this description that he could untie the knot with one hand in order to convey the message, Mishum Delo Mahadik, that apparently it's not really a tight knot. The very fact that one hand could just untie it means it's not really a permanent kind of a knot. Vaha, but in the case where he tied a bow very tightly, Mahadik, then he should be Chayv Teku. The Gemara has no answer to this question. Now we're up to the second Mishnah on Daf Kuf Yud Aleph Amid Beis. Yeshecha Kshorim She'en Chayov in Aleihem Kekesher Agmalim U'Kekesher Asvanim. Now, we're talking about the other end of the rope, the end that's attached to the poles, which is a non-permanent knot. And the Mishnah says that in those cases, he's potter from a chatos, but it's aser midrabbanan. Why? Because he's going to leave it there for a certain period of time. So they're docking for a week. So the rabbanan don't allow it. They're always afraid that he might come to tie a kesher shel kayom. It's too similar. Kosheret. Now the Mishnah goes on to tell us that there are certain cases where it's so far removed from a kesher shel kayom that it's mutter even lechatchila. That you're allowed to do it. It's not potter from a chatos, but also mirabbanan. It's mutul chatchila. Certain knots are mutul chatchila. For example, kosheres isha miftach chaluka. So what she had is she had two straps on her shoulder, and she would take one strap and from the left side and pull it on the right side, and another from here to here. That's how she closed the garment. And obviously, she's going to want to take off the garment, put it on again, take it off, put it on. Then it's not at all permanent. It doesn't even have any resemblance to a permanent knot. And that's mutul chatchila. Vechutei asvacha. Let's say you have a hat, and you have two straps coming from the two sides of the hat, and you tie a knot with these two straps. That's mutul chatchila, because as soon as you take off your hat, you're going to pull out the knot. Veshel piska. In the old times, they used to have a belt, which the two sides of the belt in front would be tied with strings that were attached to both sides of the belt. And that's how you would keep the belt tied around your belly. And then you would untie it when it was time to take off your slacks. That's not even similar to a permanent, that's mutu l'chatchila. And furthermore, v'ritzuos min ol v'sandal. They had, you know, straps around the sandals and their shoes to attach their shoes to the leg, and once again you put on your shoes, you take off your shoes. How long do you wear your shoes? So that's mutul chatchil. Benodol shel yain v'shemen. They had various kinds of canteens for wine or for oil, and it was made in a way that, you know, you had this leather bag and you tied it on top to keep it tight. But again, you would open it and close it. Ukederish al basar. Very often they would take a hot pot and they would put it into some sort of a garment, you know, that would wrap it around, and on top they would tie it up until the point at which it's time to take out the food and eat the food. That's not at all similar to a kesher shel kayom. That's mutul chatchil. Rabbi Elazar ben Yaakov Omer Koshrim lifnei habehema bishvil shelo teitzei. he's going to allow you to take a rope, and we'll see exactly what the thickness of the rope is, but anyway, he's going to tie in front of the behemoth to make sure that the animal doesn't get loose, and that's a very temporary kind of a knot. The Gemara asks the Kasha, Gufa Kasha, I don't understand the Mishnah, because Amrit, the first part of the Mishnah says, Yesh Ksharim Shein Chayov and Aleim B'Kesher, Ki Keshel Gmal B'Kesher Asaponim. There are certain knots which are temporary in nature, and they're not, they don't generate the liability for Meleches Kosher and Achiv Chatos. And let's analyze this. Chiyuva hu deleka. The Mishnah is only going as far as to say that you don't have to bring a chatas, ha'isura ika, but apparently it's awesome rabbanim. V'hadar tani, immediately afterwards, it says, kosheres isha miftach haluka, etc., etc., afilu chatchila, hachi kama. This is what the Mishnah means. Yesh ksharim she'en chayom and aleim chatas. Because they are similar to kikesher agmalim kikesher asfanim. And those are ksharim that for a certain period of time he intends to keep it tied, even though it's only temporary. Umayniyu. And here we're going to turn to Kuf Yud Beis Amud Aleph, Kitra de Katri Bizmama. These ksharim that they tie down the animal or the boat in such a way that it shouldn't fly away. Kitra de Katri Bizmama, the boat. And in those cases, Chiyuva hu deleka Yisura Ika. The Rabbanan prohibit it because he's going to leave it there for a week or two. That's a semi-permanent knot, and that's prohibited mid Rabbanan. V'yeshem utarim l'chatchila. There are other ksharim that are mutlach idmaininu, kosheres miftachei chaluka, and those are knots which you take apart on a daily basis. And that's mutar even l'chatchila. They don't resemble a kesher shel kayoma at all. And I'll just leave you with with food for thought about Galila. So let's say you do Galila Mincha time on Shabbos. The next Galila will be on Monday, if you're using the same Sefer Torah. So the question is, how do you tie Galila? Now you may say we're going to use this kind of this, that kind, you know, Velcro, this, that, and the other thing, or maybe it's only a bow. But if it's any sort of a knot, you know, you have to worry about that, because even though it's not a kesher shel kayoma, he intends in 3 days' time to take it apart, but 3 days is enough to be patur avolos, it should be awesome rabban. Okay, Rabbosai, we'll...